outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey.
Help, Kyle, I think I need help.
Oh boy. Okay, what kind of help are you requiring?
Since we were last together, I took two trips, one into the South to meet with some of the 2x2 folks, or ex-2x2 folks, and then the last week at Oral Roberts University for my 50th college reunion. There you go. That's what it was. And yeah. The weekends couldn't have been more different. Oh, my goodness.
Really?
Yeah. One's with a group of people I've never met. Not one soul that was there or around. And it was such a tender, wonderful time of sharing and helping people process. It was a whirlwind. All day Saturday, literally all day Sunday. I started at 9:30 in the morning and didn't stop talking with people till 7:30 at night.
Cool. That is a full day.
When I completely ran out of words. All gone.
Wow. But
when I walked into the Sunday morning thing, this was a strange moment. They're having it at a hotel.
Okay.
It's about 100, just slightly less than 100 folks coming together.
That's a big group.
And I walk into the banquet room where we're meeting. And the look on people's faces was not like anything I'd seen before. I've done a lot of rooms of people. And you know, the thing I fight, most rooms I go into is this hero worship, Wayne the author's here, that whole thing.
Yeah.
This was the opposite of that, in the sense that I walked into the room and people saw that I was there, and people just started to come toward me with this look of appreciation, not worship, not, oh, look at that's Wayne Jacobson. Yeah. It was just tender, and people came up and just began to share what something they'd read or heard that I said had touched their life. And people were incredibly polite. They waited till whoever was with me in the moment finished and went on. And sometimes it was a group of four or five from a family, and sometimes it was two or three. It went on for half an hour of people just slowly walking toward me. And the tenderness in the moment, I felt God smiling in the whole thing, which is really weird. I felt very tender. I have already felt really connected to what these people are going through. And then to have them come at me almost like a friend and open their heart and share and be grateful and be very specific about things. It was just unlike anything I'd ever experienced.
Was there any relational context ahead of time? Like, had you met with them via Zoom, or was there any kind of connection that way?
I've done some Zoom stuff for the wider group, and I don't know how many of them have been on there, but a lot of them had read Finding Church, some He Loves Me, some So You Don't Want Church Anymore. And the conversation started just that way, very tenderly. And we kind of got in a bigger group where we're all together. That went on until about noon. We broke for lunch, but I'm sitting at a table with about 10 people, and the conversation continues. And then we get done with that, go back in for an afternoon session with the whole group, did that till 4:30-ish or so. And then we were going to go have pizza somewhere to kind of round off the day. And the conversations continued while we're waiting for pizza. And afterwards, till about 7:30 at night, people kept just wanting to process their journeys. And it was a special weekend, the whole weekend. The time in Atlanta was great, too. Just the uniqueness of the time in Greenville was just the way people were just intimate with me from the very beginning, and open and honest, and it was amazing.
That's incredible, because normally you have to take some time for those walls to break down, for some of the reservations, or you know, the
we're checking you out, making sure you're legit, and
we trust you, is the safe, all those things.
And I don't know what was going on in their hearts, but what was going on in mine was just tender, and almost in their words, I could hear God's appreciation for the time I've invested here. Because it's a group I didn't know about 8 months ago. And I didn't know any of this was in the wings. And somehow God brought all that together in a marvelous way. And I just felt really touched, not just by them, but by God through them, which I was not anticipating. It's never happened like that in a group before. So
were there some conversations that surprised you as far as just the themes or some of the reflecting that they wanted to do with you? Like, was there a theme of intimacy, community, connection, vulnerability? Was that part of the underlying tone of what they wanted to process with you to begin with?
Yeah, and they all didn't know each other. So this was not a group of any kind.
It
was just that they all have the same kind of background, the same group, and some knew each other, surely. But no, the themes were all fairly common. One problem we had, we got to, somebody brought up, you know, how do we get all this religion stuff untangled? How do I untangle that? And I was going to use my Christmas lights analogy, except they don't do Christmas lights. So I started talking about Christmas lights and they're going, no, pick something else. Okay, so like your wife's gold necklace. No, we're not at the... I'm just going, it got to be hilarious. And I finally said, okay, so what do you get tangled up that's really complicated?
Yeah.
And some lady says, black stockings from the washing machine. Again, that's outside my experience. So, that was really funny. It got to be an ongoing joke just because we just couldn't find the analogy to take it. But the idea that we can't untangle ourselves, it's the work of the Spirit as we let love work its way in our life, he does the untangling. But no, other than that, the comments and questions and struggles are pretty common to people who come out of a highly organized, tightly wound environment. And particularly with this group, especially, there's always the threat of hell for not conforming.
Yeah.
There's even the threat of hell in this group, especially. They were talking about, you know, there's no assurance of salvation. So you can be in this group, follow all the rules, do everything they ask you to do, but you still don't know you're saved until you get before God, and then God makes a decision with you standing there.
Ooh.
Yeah. That broke my heart to labor under that threat so that, I mean, the psychosis of the group is everything's under threat, everything, with no guarantee that if I do everything you're asking me to do, I know I'm going to be saved. And then it's even worse if you're going to break away from this group, if you're going to stop being part of it, the fear is that you could end up burning in hell because of it. This one lady wrote me this after it was over. Thank you for confirming that religion isn't a requirement to have a relationship with God. That is exactly what we are confident God said to us. Hmm. But when the threat of hell looms large, it's a little unnerving to bet your soul on that. Now we can move forward with confidence because not only did God tell us that, but he also brought you into our lives as a witness of its truth. We can see the fruit that walking relationally with God without religion has produced in your life.
Oof. That, man, that comment about betting your soul on it, though, that just, talk about a magnum bullet of manipulation and control. Good grief.
And that's probably true in every religion to some degree or another. Yeah. And most Christian groups, it's if you don't do what you or believe the right thing or do the right thing, you're betting your eternal destiny on getting it right. Yeah. And that makes people reticent to move beyond the crowd, which takes me to the next week.
Okay. So, yeah, this is your... not your wedding anniversary, but your class reunion. College class reunion, not high school class reunion.
Yes. Okay. In a highly modulated environment, in the sense that this is charismatic Christianity that's a little bit performative, if I could use that word. I know some of my classmates are not going to enjoy this. I don't think many of them listen to the podcast anyway, so I think we're good.
Okay.
If some of them do, it was, oh my gosh, it's all about money, performance, and part of reunions are fundraising opportunities for the university. That is part of it. But the whole environment is made to feel, at least as Sarah and I transited it, the whole idea of there is this way of thinking and believing about God. And if you don't fit in here, and Sarah and I don't fit in there, we look at how far we have traversed from graduating in that environment. Yeah, like one person found out I had cancer, immediately grabbed me, grabbed some other people, let's pray for Wayne, be healed now, walk in it, brother. It was just, it didn't take longer than that. And I'm like, okay, I'm all open to God. If you want to heal me through this hocus pocus, fine. But there was no compassion for it. There was no, and what Sarah and I have talked about later, there's no way to be in that environment and be in pain and be loved.
Ooh. Ooh, okay. It's, say more about that. What do you mean by that?
I mean, people want you fixed. And even one of the presentations we heard was about, here's the three things you do and God will heal you, because that's how God healed me. And I remember it well from the time we were there. But when the whole thing is structured that way, it doesn't lend itself to real conversations with real people. And there's the contrast from the week before, real conversations with real people, to this, where it's more performative. People are saying the right things in that kind of charismatic theology.
Yeah.
But it's not real in the way that you get to walk alongside someone's hurting. You want to give them three ways to fix it. So if they continue to hurt, then obviously they're not doing one of the three things. And it's very, very subtle. But man, I picked up on it. And then I deal with Sarah and I talking about, okay, we used to believe all this stuff. And now we don't. So we've moved away. They've not moved anywhere. And did we move the right way? When you're the minority of two in a group of that size. And I think part of it, I hurt for my brothers and sisters, particularly those I was really close to walking in the Lord. And I would say it doesn't seem like they moved anywhere. They just exploit that environment pretty well, but they haven't grown in it. They haven't learned how to embrace it in a way that's transformative. And then I got this email on Monday flying home. This is from Kay. She wrote me about her own community. She said, I could no longer reconcile the Christ my community was following with the Christ I knew. And I've watched that divide grow impossibly deep since 2016, leaving me on the opposite side of a chasm from many people I love. Interesting. But the part about the chasm widening, you know, we were all on the same page 50 years ago.
Yeah.
And that chasm has, and I think they're God-loving, sincere people. I'm not judging them. I'm not saying they worship religion more than Jesus. It's just their idea of Jesus and how he moves is so narrow that it doesn't open the door for the honest, vulnerable conversations. I don't think I had one, even though I tried to pick at that door just a little bit and some Q&A, just some questions I'd asked to just see where people would go with it. And it was always staying safely within the performative guideline. I don't know if that makes sense, but.
Oh, it does. I mean, I guess that had to be a little bit disorienting, though, for both you and Sarah, who were educated in that thought perspective, and then to look a significant period of time later at the education, that worldview, that perspective, and to feel like, man, I feel like I'm kind of light years away from where I graduated from this institution in regards to my theology, my worldview, thinking, et cetera. And I don't know that, I guess I would have very mixed feelings being in that environment and seeing a lot of the people that I graduated with that have gone through life and gone through the decades. And there seems to be that there hasn't been a whole lot of movement. There hasn't been a lot of shift or exploration or expanding of that understanding of who God is and how he relates in the world. I don't know. That seems like it'd be very tough for, at least for me anyway. I think the idea of being heartbroken or sad or lamenting that my fellow classmates or peers or people that I connected with were still there, I think that would be hard. But yeah, I don't know. That would be a challenging space to be in.
Well, after you get through battling off, did we make a mistake and go down the wrong road?
Yeah, exactly.
There's a whole lot of the enemy just kind of pumping in there. And I'm fairly confident about the walk I've been on. But when you're in an environment where you're the minority by a huge amount, but then you come back to, but the lack of authenticity here. And Sarah would walk away from conversations and go, boy, that person is not safe. What do you mean by that? It's performative. It's they're saying the right words with their mouth in terms of fitting into that religious landscape, but there's no room for tenderness for somebody in the midst of struggle.
The statement that you made that it's not okay or not safe to be in that movement, in that worldview, and to be in pain. I don't know. I can't imagine how you and Sarah would have navigated the things that you've navigated over the last 40 years. Because you guys have experienced a lot of different challenges and heartache and pain and challenge and just disruptions in life that sounds like there wouldn't be a whole lot of space for, or let's get that fixed as quickly as possible so that we're back into this grounded, you know, yay, celebrate, big hands, hallelujah. I don't know.
And not only the pain, but God in the pain that has changed so much in our lives through it all.
Yes.
And it's made us, I think, pretty relationally grounded people, pretty authentic, pretty able to sit and hold pain, not only for ourselves, but with other people when we're near it. So it just was kind of strange.
I can only imagine. Why do you think that it's not safe or not okay to be in pain, specifically in that charismatic worldview?
Because they try to fix it.
But where did that come from? Because you said it's...
Because I think pain makes people feel uncomfortable.
Hmm.
So I want to fix it. I want to make sure I prayed the prayer, or you're praying the prayer, or you're doing the work, because your need makes it awkward for me. I think that was true of me when I was in that environment. You want God to fix everything. And you want to... People don't know how to deal. Like if I mentioned I had cancer, people didn't want to know, how are you processing that? And what's going on in your heart and head? It was, let's pray for it. Let's get it up. You know, and I think that makes it difficult to be. And if their prayers worked, it'd be great. I wouldn't mind walking away.
Yeah.
But I think about over 50 years, believing a theology that works maybe 3% of the time, what the other 90% are dealing with internally. It's just, God doesn't do that way for me. I thought it was funny. I didn't go to chapel because I knew better. And, but we had some friends that went to chapel. And so I asked him after, I said, what did they talk about today? It was a 31-year-old graduate from ORU who did the chapel. And he said, oh, I talked about being cynical and how being cynical, you can't receive anything from the Lord. So it was about dealing with our cynicism. I said, really, what text did they use? Well, they used Sarah and Abraham, you know, when the angel came and she didn't believe, she had unbelief that she couldn't get pregnant. She laughed when the angel said it, and then she lied about laughing. And so all those were earmarks of cynicism. And then I looked at him, I said, and yet she received. And he went, what? Mm-hmm. Well, she did. I mean, she still had the baby.
Yeah.
I go, well, that's okay. And because I think the lesson was, God's bigger than your cynicism.
Yeah.
It just is. And he does his stuff in our life to win us out of the places we get broken. This we're always left with, here's the things you need to do to not be broken anymore so that God can bless you, which Sarah and I have been around that for a very long time, and particularly when we're the minority point of view in that whole thing. So it was an interesting weekend. Again, great times with friends. All that was wonderful. But the kind of spiritual stuff around all that left us kind of disoriented and sad and wishing more people had got on a love track instead of a performance track.
Well, and to contrast those two weekends, to go from one of the most counterintuitive group meetings with strangers that you've ever experienced, and it to be very vulnerable, very authentic, very love-based right out of the gate, and then to go back and see people that you've known for 50 plus years, and it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like there wasn't a whole lot of space, warm reception for either you or Sarah to share authentically about the things that have been going on over the last 4 or 5 years.
Not that we weren't warmly received in the friendship, staying inside the friendship and memories from ORU past and sharing the good things in our lives. Everybody's okay with that. But when it got to anything, or there are times we just didn't go there because it just, there was not the interest to say, so what are you and Sarah dealing with now? Or what's your life like now? Which I'd ask that question a lot. So what's your life look like now? And I'd get kind of not something that invited me into a deeper space with them. I don't know. I don't know if they knew how to do it, or it was like when I was with the Jesus people folks from, I don't know, 8 years ago or so, and they were talking about, we were born in revival and raised in captivity. And they were left pining for the good old days that they had missed for 50 years. They'd been that almost that long for them. I don't know. I think this whole idea of the life of Jesus being a journey into love and watching love change your heart. I find myself so grateful that however God got us on that track and however he's been part of that with us, just really, really grateful that we found our way there and that God's been faithful. I wish he would have done that with a lot more people. And I'm sure he's trying. I have no doubt that he's laying that groundwork, but sometimes we miss it. Because the performative part's just easier. I go to service Sunday, I worship, and particularly in that, I'm not ragging on all religious services here, but that kind of performative, pretend all's well, have a good entertainment moment, go back and just live your life best you can during the week and get on from there. Especially there where there's a lot of bells and whistles that are you. a lot of technology and whatever.
And a lot of gold glass.
Yes, I understand you love the architecture at ORU.
Oh my gosh.
It's a little
creepy. Man. Yeah, if there ever was a definition for cringe, that would be it. Oh my gosh.
Hey, it's my alma mater there, man. Those were futuristic buildings back then.
Oh my word. They were something kind of buildings back then.
They all have deep meaning in them. Crown of thorns, a thing that looks like a spaceship. And yesterday on the way home, Sarah and I were reading a couple of Psalms. And this really hit me. This is my journey in this crazy Psalm. For one, Psalm 14:5 says, God is present in the company of the righteous. And I read that now with just because of the book we're working on. So God is present in the company of the just. Which that makes a whole different deal, right? Because one's performance and one is my heart's been changed by love. And then the next chapter, short chapter, is Psalm 15. Begins with, Lord, who may dwell in your sacred tent, who may live on your holy mountain. And it says, the one whose walk is blameless, who does what is righteous or who does what is just, who speaks the truth from their heart, whose tongue utters no slander, who does no wrong to a neighbor and casts no slur on others, who despises a vile person, but honors those who follow the Lord, who keeps an oath even when it hurts and does not change their mind, who lends money to the poor without interest, who does not accept a bribe against the innocent, and whoever does these things will never be shaken. And as I read that to Sarah this time, I was reflecting back on when I was a young man. That's what it takes to be on the hill of the Lord. I'm going to find my way to that. I can do that. And then you get a little more honest down the road and realize, man, if I've got to be righteous and cast no aspersions on other people, honest into the heart, swear to your own evil. And then I'm thinking, man, I can't do it. I'm never going to be able to do that.
Yeah.
But then you get into the imputed righteousness thing of the Reformation, which is, geez, I'm already that. Even if I don't treat people that way, I'm already that because I've been imputed with righteousness from Jesus. So I get to be on the mountain. And then in the last few years to realize love changes a life from the inside. And so these things about walking blamelessly, being just, speaking the truth from the heart, whose tongue utters no slander. And to really think in the Psalm 14, when it says, for God is present in the company of the just. And that's not something we've ever focused on in the gatherings I've been a part of. You know, the gathering's all about the music and the sermon and the vibe and inviting God's presence and those things that we've talked about on here. I'm reading this and where Sarah and I are talking about it, I'm thinking, you know, that's exactly what I think I know from the life I've lived in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. When I'm with people to whom love is making them just, honest, mm-hmm. integrity, kind, when I find those people, God's present right there. Mm-hmm. And where the performative thing goes on, or people saying the right words, but not the heart's not engaged with it in the same way,
yeah.
or they're competing for power of some kind, political or religious, whatever, the presence isn't there in the same way. So I think what I wonder is, do they have to work harder to keep the illusion up? Because presence isn't as real in an environment of political intrigue and manipulation, a lot of what church politics can be behind the scenes. I wonder, because I love that idea of God dwells with the just.
Yeah. I think for me, there's the sense of a person who has encountered God's love in their life, and they're allowing that love to establish a deeper level of character and justice in that person's life. There's a flavor to it. There's a holisticness to it. There's a substance to it. There's a presence to it that comes with it. And I think that's the challenge for me, is that there's a feeling of, you say the right words, but there's a hollowness to it. Mm-hmm. There isn't the substance. There isn't the presence that comes with it. It feels like, yes, you're saying the right words, but is there any strength to it? Is there any resolve? Is there any backbone to it? Or is it, like you said, maintaining the illusion? And I think that's the challenge, is if you're trying to performance-based maintain presence, then it comes off as hollow. It comes off as insincere. It doesn't come off as relational at all. And I think that's, man, I'm really wrestling. I had an interaction with a student, and it was last week, and I misinterpreted something and should have checked in with said student, because I did something that normally I would have checked in if I would have known that I had done it. And so, but said individual got really, really, really angry that I didn't check in with them. And that proceeded to them later screaming at me in front of other students.
Oh, wow.
And man, I had the conversation with the student later. I pulled them aside and just said, hey, like, I'm not sure what's going on, but I just wanted to check in because that seemed counter character, counter what I know of you. And it seems like I missed something. And they're like, yeah, you know, blah, 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 blah. And they kind of told me what I had done wrong and that I hadn't checked in on with them. And so I owned it and apologized for it and said, I'm really sorry. If I would have known, I would have acted very differently. That's not how I like to act or behave by any means. And yet this individual didn't have any self-awareness of the fact that they were screaming in public at a faculty member that probably could give job references, or it's somebody that, you know, that there was no concept that their behavior in a tense or frustrated moment was unacceptable. And yet on top of that, this individual has made it very public that they adhere to a specific Christian religion. And it was just really intriguing. Like, there's just an unsettledness in my heart about it in regards to, okay, you're willing to call people out on their behavior and on their language and on the way that they're performing. And yet there isn't a sense of love or rest or grace that's with it at all. It's very performance-esque. And yet you're using ideas and words that are cloaked in religious principle. And man, it's tough for me to wrestle with that. I don't know what to do with that, because it's like, man, my heart breaks, because it's like, okay, is that all you know? Is that Is that all you've experienced? Is that what your experience of God's faith, God's love, God's kingdom been? And if so, then that's really heartbreaking to me. But even more so, like, what is the testimony that went out to other students, that went out to campus, that went out to people that were in that situation and watched this thing go down? And it's like, yeah, that person has ascribed to be a leader in the church group and will stop sporting activities in order to pray with their teammates and different things. And I'm like, there's just a tension that I don't know how to rectify that in my heart. I'm just like, man, I don't know what to do with this.
It's a real disconnect, isn't it?
It really was. And there's still this like incongruence in me that I'm just like, I don't know what to do with that.
And yet it seems that in Jesus dealing with the Pharisees, for instance, yeah. And I think this was true when I was a good Pharisee, is that the effort put into providing the front, the good behavior that's not flowing from inside of you, it's just trying to put on a good front for people.
Yeah.
Really leads to a frustration and an angst that can come out explosively in a time when I really felt justified in I was wrong so I can blow up on somebody.
Yeah.
And I think I had enough of not wanting to do it in public, but certainly in private at times that angst comes out because you can't hold it forever. And I think that's what I felt from some of my classmates back at ORU. It's just, man, I felt the emptiness behind the performative stuff.
Mm.
You know, like you said, it doesn't have a lot of weight. There's not a lot, even if they're saying the right words, it doesn't come from love. It doesn't come from that heart that's been, because all these things I read in Psalm 15, now I look at them and go, only love produces that. It's not that we can go down the list and say, okay, I'm going to work on these 8 things and do better at them.
Yeah.
Because that's back to the performative thing. But when I read it this time, I'm going, look what love can produce.
Mm.
If I can be loved by God and walk in that love and let that love rearrange the things in my mind, the way I think and the way I treat people, then it will come out as justice without me even having to try to be just.
Mm.
And the people who have to try to be just because they think that's what God wants or try to be whatever, there comes a time when all that builds up to the point that they can't contain it anymore. Yeah. And then it does blow. You have to blow it off somewhere. And somebody gets to be the recipient of all that angst. And in this case, in an incredibly inappropriate way on a campus, what would not restrain you from putting that on somebody more your equal than your professor?
Well, and that, I mean, I think the piece of that too that was intriguing to me was, okay, you're also a person who is training to be in higher stress environments where there's a lot of need for performance. And but even more so than that and that concern, you know, it was that I think that the angst, the frustration, that because it felt like, I think the best way that I could describe it is it felt like self-righteous anger. That's what I experienced. And I was like, what? I just got completely blindsided by something right now. And I have no idea what's going on, but that's, the flavor was self-righteous anger of I have been wronged and this person is not acting in the way that is just. And so I am going to bring them back into righteousness. It's like,
especially if you feel like I've got them dead to rights. I know absolutely. I'm right and they're wrong. And I'm not going to look at it from their point of view at all. I'm just going to finally let fly the angst I feel in my soul all the time.
Yeah.
And that's what gives me a real sense of compassion for people who live in these performative environments and who have to put on a front. I remember that so well. I remember when I had to do that.
Yeah.
Now I don't feel like I do that anywhere at all. I don't feel like I'm really angry here. I'm going to restrain myself because I'm in public. And yet I'm more honest than I've ever been with people because gentleness carries honesty. Yeah. And humility can carry honesty without it putting someone on the defensive.
Yeah, I think, I mean, honestly, we're nearing the end of our time together, but it makes me honestly think of this quote that I heard this week that it talked about the person who needs nothing from the meeting or from the space or from the interaction has the most potential for positive influence. And that was really intriguing to me because they were talking about this idea of the people who go into a meeting or go into a space or go into a conversation, and there's a lot of need there. There's that idea that they're going to manipulate, they're going to try to force, they're going to try to perform. There's not that sense of rest in who they are, who God's created them to be, what their identity is. There's not that rest, that substance at all. It's, okay, what do I need to do to either self-promote or self-protect in this environment? Because I have a high level of need and in the result of this conversation.
That's what we talked about earlier about living from fullness.
Yeah.
What love, I think, allows us to do, and I use these three words when I was, and maybe I'll explore these more when we have time, but I found myself when we were in Greenville putting this conversation to three little blocks. One, love, which, you know, people in those settings, they're very used to the love of God being a conversation, even if it's not love. So I use the word affection. Affection
nice.
With God. That's what you want to explore, that affection and how it touches you. And then presence. Inside the affection, how is God present? How do I plug into that presence? How do I make myself more aware of that presence and really cultivate presence in my life? And then the last one was fullness. If affection leads me to presence and presence to fullness, now I'm in whatever conversation I'm in, whatever engagement with another person, and I don't need anything. Yeah. I don't need, that doesn't mean God won't bless me through what other people are going through and what they need, but you don't go into a conversation, even our disappointed at times conversations at ORU. Sarah and I didn't go away from like, oh my gosh, we needed something and we didn't get it. It was more, we just felt sad that there was not more engagement to be had with people who had shared ministry and life together 50 years ago. And many of us have maintained contact over the years. I don't know what they think of my journey. I'm sure if they've read anything or drilled down very far, they might even question whether that Wayne guy is still saved or not. I have no idea. But presence and fullness allows you to live differently without thinking. It's not like I have to, okay, I'm going to try and be full today. But the fullness of presence is a gift all its own. And then you can navigate whatever need you have inside that. Okay, God, what would you fill up here?
Yeah.
That I wouldn't have this outstanding need. And oftentimes it's fix the circumstance and I'll be fine.
Correct.
But if the prayer is, how do I find fullness in this situation in spite of it, which it doesn't mean it's godly, the circumstance. The circumstance could be diabolical. It could be demon inspired. They could be the enemy trying to rip your guts out, but there's still a fullness to be had inside that. And I think it all begins with affection. Until God's on your side, until you have a sense that his affection is so rich and deep for me that now I can cultivate presence because I'm not afraid of him. I don't mind him looking into the depth of my life, seeing my failures. I don't mind talking about my stuff with him because I have his affection and he's there to untangle it, not to make it worse, not to add condemnation and shame to it, which is only going to make the bondage tighter. And then bring me into that fullness that says, okay, all I have, all I need is in him. And now I get to share openly in the world. And then when that comes together with somebody else living out of fullness, it's just amazingly wonderful. And if you're with somebody who doesn't know fullness, then there's a better discernment, I think, as to what to say, what to do to unpack their shame, to unpack their condemnation, and to help them begin to find some way, in the words of Toby, to be an imparter of life. The life I've received, now I get to impart. Yeah. So what encouragement, what affirmation, what gift could I give somebody that's going to let them feel better for our engagement having been there? And most of us, and most of my conversations through the whole of my life was more about what do I need out of this conversation than what can I give?
Yeah.
And the last few years, it's been, what can I give? I have what I need. I have it from Jesus. So now what can I give? And then I also, that's not saying I can't be incredibly blessed by relationships I have and the input to my life, because I do.
Yeah. No, I think one of the things that is interesting is you're talking about imparting life. And yet I think about the people that I'm going to use counseling I statements. When I did not know the love of Christ and I knew only the performance of religion, and that it was, I need to drum up the performance of being a good Christian, the performance of being saved, the performance of being just, the performance of being righteousness, I didn't have a whole lot of life to impart.
For sure.
Because there was no life that was in it. It was okay, this is what I have to do, but there was no love that was informing it. There wasn't the love of Christ that was authoring it, informing it, developing it, building it in my life. And this idea of imparting something to that other person is like, no, what, how am I going to get out of this conversation? How am I going to gain out of this conversation? Or even my imparting, is my imparting going to impart more righteousness into their life? Are they going to walk away feeling more inspired to be a quote unquote godly person? Oof, it makes me kind of shudder a little bit thinking about living in that space and trying to connect with people, trying to invite them into the life of Christ when all I was doing was performing.
And for me, I think my frustrations were more vertical. I was doing all this stuff for God, and I was doing the right thing. I was saying the right thing, even though I didn't feel it inside.
Yeah.
And I wasn't getting the backing I thought I should get. It wasn't yielding the fruit I thought God owed me. And that frustration, boy, builds up over time. Living loved in this trek of my life is incredibly fulfilling. Every night I go to bed grateful for who God is and what he's done in my life.
Yeah.
I used to go to bed frustrated every night. God didn't do more after all I was doing for him. Because God wasn't going to reward the performative thing. It's not that he wouldn't be there inviting me to something more real, but he wasn't going to reward it in a way that would reinforce it.
So why does it appear that he does reward it at times? Like I think about the name it and claim it people, or the Joel Olsteins, or like I literally saw this, oh my gosh, this, maybe I told you this the other day, but a pastor was preaching a sermon and rolls a Bentley into the onto the stage that he's preaching from, that's all blinged out and has spinners on it, and this is, you know, this is the expression of the love and faithfulness of God. Does God have any involvement in that whatsoever? Is he part of that at all?
I would think not, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's more tricky when you take somebody like that and God heals their kid of some horrible disease.
Yeah.
Okay, now I don't get that.
Yeah.
But God doesn't do what he does to reward stuff.
Mm.
God's got a mission in our lives and inviting us into something. And he does drop his fingerprints into places. I know he did in my life.
Yeah.
The things I wanted him to do, he didn't do. But he did other things that kept inviting me to something more real. And that journey's been so worth it.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.